Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning. This is I Am Resistance, the pandemic edition. No frills today, boys and girls. Just right into a rant of pandemic proportion because I have been on pandemication now. 4 weeks. I don't come on here very often because, and hopefully this tech works, I have no idea. I would say I've taken a vow of silence, and I just keep my mouth shut and watch. And I just lost my will over the last few years to talk very much. Grief, all that fun stuff. But, you know, watching this display, this pandemic unfold has just been fascinating. And so for those of you that have never listened and will never listen, I call myself Jeff the Inquiring Sage, which is ridiculous, but we'll call it that. So, and I have a very particular flavor of, you know, my anti-civilization abolitionist ideology that's not an ideology at all. It's nihilism. It's anarcho-nihilism. Love that. Or, you know, all the green environmentalist fun stuff. But, you know, I'm watching this pandemic. Every day, you know. And I know you, my fellow slaves, watch it as I do, with this fear of this future coming, of suffering, great suffering, not having toilet paper. So we go and we grab all the toilet paper we can. Guns. We need guns so we can protect ourselves from them, the have-nots. Whoever will come from my toilet paper, I must defend my toilet paper. Love it. I'll try to stay on track. Not likely. So, you know, I watch. And I think about myself, of course. How will this affect me? What will this do to me? You know, what's the future? We want the future so badly. And that's what we've been taught, you know, to prepare for the future, stay in line for the future. The masters teach us that if you don't think about the future, if you don't conform, if you don't learn these skills, the future will be bad for you. You will have a terrible future. You won't have a future, right? The consequences of you not following are very bad, very painful. Ooh, we love to use that, the fear, fear, fear all day, every day. The media is fear. See, that's what I want to really rant about. I always go back, as I say, if anyone read the blurb of what inspired me to do this talk was, Blessed is the Flame, an introduction to the concentration camp resistance and anarcho-nihilism by Sarah Finsky. And there's a passage I will read to you that It's stuck with me for years. I've read this book, gosh, at least 6 or 7 times. This to me is if you follow Stoicism, the Stoics always suggest that you do a negativity, you be negative. See, that's what really stands out to me more than anything. Especially if you go on social media, it's all about being positive and let's be helpful and supportive and be positive. And oh, it's just nauseating. You just want to throw up and just projectile vomit onto everybody. It's a lie. That's I think what is it's this huge lie, but I'll get back to that. You know, the Stoics would say you have to prepare. If you're going to prepare yourself for the future, which I don't know if they're actually telling you to prepare. They're more like, always be mindful. We'll put that in that nice word, that you're screwed, right? That you're fucked, that you're going to die. You're going to suffer immensely. Now, these are true apologists for civilization. Don't ever forget, that's what philosophy is. So I follow their practice. They say make sure you negatively visualize what's going to happen, and you know your children will die, and you know we're all Job in that sense. But in this case, it's civilization. And so I go back to Blessed is the Flame constantly because it's just fascinating and inspiring, and you can get it free on the Anarchist's archive website or whatever. Check it out. It's worth it. I have a hard copy of it, and I've destroyed it, and I love it. So let me read you this passage on page 67. For those who did not succumb to despair, the key to survival lay in the tension between logger time and suicidal despondency. Throughout the Holocaust memoirs, there's a sense of total immersion in the present, something we'll call suspension. This experience involved a violent eradication of the past and the future, resulting in the unblinking commitment to survival in the present moment. And that's what, it's this part where he says, the survival lay in the tension between logger time and suicidal despondency. And then we do that. That's what mindfulness practice is. We anchor ourselves in the present. The future is always there to scare us. That's why we don't act, because of futurity. What about the children? Futurity paralyzes us. Reproductive futurity, they call it. But I'll save that for, again, another conversation. The point for me is that we're wedged in between that. The tension between our prison camp time, which is civilization time, which is the time of, I got to work, I got to pay my bills, I have to do my job, I have responsibilities, I live here in the concentration camp. So that time frame, that from the time I get up in the morning till the time I go to bed is logger time, is prison camp time. You know, we try to steal some time for ourselves, you know. And we actually, I think, are aware when we have that extra time for ourselves, because our overseers, though they're still there in our heads, our masters, we have that sense maybe a little bit. We have that time to also see how truly screwed we are. And so that's the depression that I have to keep doing this for 60, 70 years, you know, that the mythology I've been fed since birth of happiness, and if I just work hard, I can live the American dream. I can be independently wealthy. I can get mine and have the time to where I can go on Instagram and just take pictures of myself on luxurious beaches with my bikini body and, you know, just, you know, be in Bali doing one-arm pull-ups and, you know, just have this, you know, super life of luxury and peace and harmony and be at one with nature and just, you know, be an artist and, you know, all this just wonderful fantasy that is ultimately, we know, just a lie, because that's what civilization is, this huge lie built on lies. It has to be a lie because you see it. You see it. That's what our mental illness is, the despondency of seeing the lie. So that's why when we have that time, we fill it with positivity, which really what brought me here is how depressing all the positivity is. It just toxifies the air. Like one author called it negatively saturated phenomenon, because it's bullshit. It's just full-on bullshit. Yeah, all the positivity, all the yoga instructors and the spiritual people, they're on the Instagrams and the Facebook, and they're just pouring out their you know, loving kindness and support, and I want to help people, but also I need to make a living, so come to my online yoga program. You know, it's because, you know, in the end, it's just capitalism. Now, I'm not reducing these people to just trying to sell me something, but you know they are. You know they are. You sense it. And so, plus, there's a hook. And they're like, you know, hey, what do I say resonate with you? Cool. I don't want your money. But if you want to donate some, I don't want your money. But here, I have this program to sell to you. I'm just sharing. I'm just sharing. But for $9.95, I'll share this too. That's the way of it, you know. But when you see it for what it is, and you call them out on it, oh my gosh, they will crucify you. So what civilization, I think, has done so masterfully, and other authors have pointed this out so much, is how we've created that space to where there can be no room. And that's what Huxley talked about. We've created space to where there's no space for examination of that. There's no space for negativity, or what some might call critical thought. There's no space to say, to point rudely and say, that's a lie. That's bullshit. You're bullshitting me for the purpose of keeping the real plague going at all costs, the real plague, which is civilization itself. That's the real plague. But since we're so immersed in it, we can't see any other way. Like, people will ask me anytime I'd be negative, they'll be like, so what am I supposed to do with that? I'm like, I don't know. What do you mean? Why are you asking for there's something to be done with it? It's like, this is a world of shit. And so, but then, like, that's what we're told to think about is, well, then you have to create all these coping skills to distract yourself from the horror of everyday life. The horror of everyday life, lager time, which facilitates, though I wouldn't say causes, cause and effect is always tricky, the suicidal despondency, that disillusion that creates dis-ease. And we know that pandemics are caused by the plague, which is civilization. Now, I'm not saying biologically, of course. It's the cramming of people together in cities that creates that possibility, plus the exchange of these wonderful things called viruses, because they're packed in there like chickens. Chickens on a factory farm. That's us. Slaves to be used and abused. And they're like, okay, well, what are we going to do with that? I was like, well, face it, I guess. I don't have an answer. If I had an answer, I'd write a book. But I don't want to write a book. I mean, I do, because I like to write. But, and those authors that do, they're selling you something. But you have to go with that. Negative. Go negative. I don't like Sarah Finsky, but I love this book. No, I don't. It doesn't matter if I like. They explore something, you know. But I have to see the bullshit. Maybe this whole setup is wrong. Maybe, and they even say in the book, oh no, civilization isn't a concentration camp, but it is. How would you not parallel it completely? That's what the whole book is, a parallel between, you know, what civilization, you know, the concentration camps were a culmination of a practice, a genocidal practice that has always been going on for 10,000 years. This isn't new, and many authors have pointed that out. This isn't some new phenomenon. You know, Zygmunt Bauman, the sociologist, points out that the very rationality of civilization is the Holocaust. It's their very own, what one author, and I'll talk about him at some point too, the notion of perpetual progress, right? This idea that it's always, there's always progress, right? That's what civilization always says. We're making progress. Progress is what's important. See, we've progressed from this to this to this. Our life expectancy, we live better. We have indoor plumbing. We have all this cool technology. We have more leisure time. All the lies they spin to get us to play along. But really what gets us to play along is, in the United States in particular, is a $700 billion military-industrial complex that's not just pointed outward, it's pointed inward. Because there's no such thing as the United States, we all know. It's just a nice idea. And the corporatocracy is pointed everywhere except at itself. But that's the point of it, right? They get us to, that we're taught, well, from the beginning, from our birth, it's, you know. But we also know that we have the capacity to dig deeper. And when, you know, it's as much as they want to breed it out of us, we know there's still this capability to say this instinctive sense that isn't necessarily intellectual by any means or thoughtful in the sense of acquiring book learning or thinking. It's this deep sense that this is wrong. And then they'll say, no, that's your mess up. It's because you're mentally ill. It's you're mentally ill because you don't want what we're selling. You don't want what we're selling. So it's not us, because we're here protecting you from nature, the Hobbesian thesis. Because out there, without us, it's nasty, brutish, and short, right? So you need us. So being negative, challenging it, being cynical at the lies and the bullshit that this is going on all the time is just so much fun, and I can't recommend it enough. But again, we it takes a toll, and it's not well received, so you have to be you, right? We have to find our own path into things. And I think I spent too many years trying to tell people how to live, and it's a terrible mistake. Terrible mistake. So what word is there to spread but negativity? But you have to do it tactically or you will be crucified. And it's easy to tell people to crucify themselves, but it's not easy to live it. So I don't tell anybody to do nothing. You do you. Right? You do you. I've done it too much. I'm just out here talking shit because what else are you going to do? They could say, you're full of it. Of course, I am full of it. I'm just one fool, one slave like you out here struggling, trying to be positive. Another one of the locusts in the Leviathan. They give you an answer, though. In Blessed is the Flame, in a sense, a response, excuse me. And I do agree with them. Nihilists seek the destruction of everything that compromises society. And because that aspiration will never be shared by the majority or even a substantial portion of the population, to wait for mass consensus is tantamount to defeat. So we can't wait for something to happen. So we try to create that tension, right, that's already there by that negativity. So what we try to do is create ruptures, right, that rupture. We talk about it, the messianic time. And to me, by being cynical and negative and talking shit, you know, by some of these authors, like my beloved Julian Langer and Feral Consciousness and Feral Iconoclasm, you know, you see the bullshit for what it is and you smash it with a hammer, as Nietzsche suggested. Philosophy with a hammer, you smash, and you have to pick your battles because you will be smashed, you know. Everybody talks a lot of shit about Derek Jensen, but he has talked so much good shit that is negative. Few, I think, rival him. And, you know, I'm not going to put these guys on pedestals. It's more just like, if it resonates with you, examine it. See the BS for for what it is. I wrote a blog just smashing on ecotherapy, just smashing on it. And I think it is bullshit. I think it's lip service to, oh, you know, because again, it's that whole idea of therapy. Why I'm negative about therapy is because it's trying to teach you how to adjust to the concentration camp. And I don't know if that serves us, that word serves. Because it might just do us as much harm as good. That's what we have to challenge cynically, right? We have to attack it and explore it for ourselves. Don't listen to me, but think about it. But don't just think about it, experience it. And I think that's ecotherapy. You could spin it in that it could be a way to reconnect or to connect or to create that rupture between longer time and suicidal despondency to help us. That word help, who will be very, very skeptical of help, because help comes at a cost, because help really means coercion, I would argue. So it's that, what do I know that you don't know that's going to somehow assist you in living better? Again, perpetual progress. So 10 years ago, I'm going to jump off this. Well, this is, I could go on. 10 years ago, I read a book called Sex at Dawn, The Prehistoric Origins of Modern Sexuality by Christopher Ryan and another author who's disappeared because we all forget her. I waited 10 years for a second book, which is called Civilized to Death. And I give him credit because his book, the first book, did something that I didn't recognize so easily, which was he questions monogamy and the practices and all that, which was great. And I definitely am, you know, but more so is he questions few questions or did that it's civilization itself. So I have to give them credit, them for that was the, I mean, I'd studied at university for a long time, and a bunch of philosophies and thinking is about problem solving. When you go deeper, the very nature of problem solving is the problem, right? You think there's a problem. And so philosophy says always that if you just were more philosophical, if you had the right ideas, like the Buddha would say, the right mind, the right speech, you know, the right tone, the right everything. Now, it's not quite the same thing, of course. That's what philosophers do, is parse hairs and say, I'm conflating everything. Conflation. Don't conflate things. Yes, yes. Don't ever stop questioning, of course. But then they want you to be paralyzed, because that's the goal of philosophy, to paralyze you, some would say. But Christopher Ryan's book put me on a path, I would say. I give it credit. It led me to the Derrickson. It led me to looking at civilization itself and the way we've constructed this 10,000-year experiment and all the avenues that go in and out of that, which it's a maze, right? It's like the book Westworld or the TV show. We think there's something, we get obsessed with the maze, and so we think there's something to find in the maze that will lead us to a conclusion, a course of action, right? Because we're taking one ideology after the other, whether it's Marxism or democracy or all these, you know, these different types of philosophies or rationalism, empiricism, you know, all of these, we think that they'll lead us somewhere, or that we're actually unpacking something, we're unpacking things, when really we're just in different parts of the maze that's leading us just into more mazes, right? Our own. One hallucination after another, one author suggests. But we're creating more, right there. It's a disease, dis-ease, that perpetuates itself like progress, perpetual progress. There's a perpetual progress. We think evolution means progress, but it doesn't really, if you look at it. But it's not progressing to some end result. Just this idea that we evolved to civilization, which there's no evidence that actually supports that. Something happened, that's all we know. But we think we need to know, like as if there's an origin. If we just pinpointed, you know, patient zero. Who was the first infected person that brought this terror to us? You know. And of course we fantasize that we were all just flowing in, you know, nature, which again is itself a construct, but lots to look at if you wish to look there. But what Ryan does in Civilized to Death is explore civilization in a very interesting way. You know, and he would be called not positive, you know, because he doesn't think well of it. You know, at the same time, as many authors do too, who explore, shall we call, ecological thought, also acknowledge, or at least put up a barrier that says, you know, it's here now and we're kind of lost in this world and there's no place to go. We can just, all we can do is create a better prison camp, you know. And I think that's where you see a lot of the discussion has been and will be, which is why it's positive. Is how can we make a better prison camp? We need reforms to make better prison camps. And you being negative doesn't help us reform the prison camp. He talks about it in the sense of a zoo, right? So what's happened is he sees us, he points out the fact that grasshoppers and locusts are the same species. They are, I guess. I'm not an insectologist. I know they're called entomology, right? Yeah, entomology or entomology. I always mixed up the two. But they're the same species, and only under certain environmental conditions do they become locusts, which, out of a desperation, almost suicidal despondency, they devour in swarms, right, due to environmental conditions. And another author that suggests that what changed us millennia ago was a breakdown of our bicameral mind and stress. He says stress basically gave us consciousness. Fascinating stuff. I'm out of time, but I'm going to go on for a little bit longer. So we see, like, how stressful our lives are. And then we're taught to say, oh, well, just think about it differently. Reframe it. So the frame, reframing, we psychologize it. We don't question the psychology. We just know we have to fix it or we succumb, right? To succumb to mental illness, which that's not what happens, of course. You question it. It's much more. I think we get broken down further, but we've never been intact. But that's another conversation. But I think it's that point of what therapists do is they are really supporters of the status quo. And so that's why when I think of ecotherapy, I want to scream bullshit, you know. And then the practitioners who think of themselves authentic will say, well, I don't do that, right? And so cynically, I say, again, bullshit. And they'll just say, well, then you don't need to, you know, come to my practice, or you don't need to come to my nonsense. You're like, yeah, of course. But it's that whole thing of we can't discern, right? We can't ever discern the lie because it's all lies. Because the plague is everyday life in a concentration camp. And we want a happy ending. We want a narrative, narrative after narrative after narrative that supports the lie. And that's the hardest thing, I think, is that when you have a hard time playing along with the lie, it puts you in a very difficult position. Because you think of it, because you know the outcome. If you don't play along, you're excluded. That's putting it nicely. But that's what it is to be negative, is to run that risk. We all know it. That's why you can't ask somebody to do it. It's as simple as if you speak up too much, you will suffer the terrible consequences that go with it. Because you might be living quite comfortably, and we know comfort is king. Give us the comfort. We'll say, submit, and we'll give you the comfort that you need. So we submit. We submit. And we are, as Huxley says, we are thankful for our servitude. I want to say, fuck that. Easier said than done. My time is up. That was my rant for the pandemic edition of I Am Resistance Radio. I hope it was terribly annoying. And remember what the real plague is. The real plague is civilization. Everyday life itself. I leave you soundtrack from The Divide. Very disturbing movie. Check it out.